Well, today we are talking about the heart. And what was interesting is I talked to surgeons and doctors. I said, what do you know about the heart that we don't? And I learned some amazing things that I hope you'll be as amazed as well.
My name is Brad Mummert. I'm a physician assistant at Cincinnati Children's in the cardiothoracic surgery team. I get to work as part of a team to make sure that kiddos that have congenital cardiac issues, that we can intervene on that and help them to live long, healthy lives. The heart is incredible. It operates basically like a nonstop motor in our bodies. The average lifespan for a human is 78 to 80 years, and in that time frame, it will beat about 3 billion times. And on top of that, it's self-healing, and there's no replacement whatsoever. Every man-made engine that's ever been created, the longest that it runs nonstop, I think, is a maximum of between 72 to 75 years. And it's not self-healing. And most motors, if you think about your car motor, only lasts about 12 to 15 years. So the fact that they have spent millions of dollars trying to replicate that from a medical perspective and have come up short is pretty incredible. And it just speaks to the testament of how complex and dynamic and incredible our heart is. I think thinking about the heart reminds me of the incredible beauty and the incredible wisdom that God has, because he knew what we needed in our lives, every organ, every cell, every tissue, in order for us to survive and adapt and live our lives. And I think the heart is just a true testament to that. I think that just seeing the heart beat on a regular basis is one of the biggest privileges I have, because it's kind of life right there in front of your eyes. And it impacts so much more than just that 1 second. Every one of those heartbeats allows us to live our lives and all the great things and all the challenging things. And being able to see that on a regular basis is a pretty incredible privilege. I'll never forget the first time that I saw a beating heart in cardiac surgery. It was my first day on the new job, and the surgeon actually asked me to hold the heart over for something they were doing in the surgery. And not only to see it and visualize it, but also to feel the heart beating and moving in those couple seconds is just, there are no words. There are a few things in my life I describe as awesome, but that is one of the few times I would say that it really put into perspective of just the beauty and the power that God had in mind with designing our hearts and our bodies.
Was interesting. That must be like a hazing event they do for many doctors, because several doctors said that happened to them. They went in for their first day and they just happened to be asked to hold a heart. And both of them got emotional, didn't have words to describe having a human heart in your hand and seeing what pumps blood and gives life and just how mesmerizing it was, the wonder of it. They got emotional talking about it the same way maybe a father or a mother describes childbirth, that there's just something, nothing else like the wonder of being there when life is created. It stirs something in your head. It stirs something in your heart. And that's what we're going to look at today, that you and I, like they experience, can have a change of heart when we get close to the heart. We get close to examining what it is that keeps you alive. And you can learn something about a creator by looking at their creation. You can learn about the ingenuity, their artistry, their beauty, their wonder, their attention to detail. So I want to try and get close to the heart today in hopes that maybe you'll have a change of heart, a deeper sense of wonder, a deeper sense of awe, a deeper sense of appreciation for how important you might be, how loved you are, that all this machinery was placed into your body. So we're going to look at three investigations today, and as we do that, in this series we've said this. We've said, what if the information you're looking for God is not out there in the cosmos? What if the evidence you've been searching for is actually not out there, but in here? In your very anatomy is the evidence for the God you're longing to know or wondering if you should know, or wondering how you could know. What if all that evidence is right there in front of you? Three investigations. The first one we're going to look at is how to investigate your heart like a Scooby-Doo mansion. Do you remember Scooby-Doo mansions? See, you thought it was going to be all heady here today. You remember Scooby-Doo mansions? The thing about a Scooby-Doo mansion is there's always like the main rooms, but there's always these secret passageways, right? You can open this door, and boom, you pop through a wall into that room. There are these secret workarounds, secret tunnels. As I sat with Brad 6 months ago, and I said, what do you know and your surgical team know about the heart that we don't as laymen? And he began to describe a whole series of these. Now, as we've looked at the anatomy of the body, we've learned that your heart that keeps you alive is protected, right? It's protected by this incredible shield, the shield that is both flexible and tough, like steel cable, called the ribs. And that's protecting your lungs. And we learned that the lungs are connected to your heart with a whole series of, in this case, red and blue, the arteries and the veins. And that allows that lung to infuse oxygen in the bloodstream that your heart is going to be pumping through the entire body. But protected, deep underneath all of that, is your heart. And your heart, just barely the size of your fist or bigger, has four different chambers, these two atriums and two ventricles. There's actually two pumps infused into one, if you think about the ventricles as separate pumps. And it's not only feeding the rest of your body, pumping that life-giving nourishment to the rest of your body, it's actually also, as you can see here, it's feeding itself. It has to supply its own oxygen with the red, blue, carbon dioxide coming back with the blue here. So it feeds itself, it feeds you, and it's going to pump faithfully through your entire life. But if you looked at your heart like, say, a blueprint, here's what it would look like, not the physical parts of where it goes. This is how the flow works in your heart. So the oxygen comes from your lungs, and the red represents the oxygenated blood. That blood will come down and will be pumped into this left atrium. Once it gets in the left atrium, the bottom part is a ventricle. That is the part that's actually pumping and doing the pulling or the sucking of that oxygenated blood here. It will then leave the aorta, and it will head up to the rest of your body. In this illustration, the brain's representing the whole body. It actually goes two different directions. The body will then absorb the oxygen, and the whole time it's picking back up that carbon dioxide, which needs to be pushed out through the lungs. It will be then come back into the heart through this other atrium, which has also got a separate pump, this ventricle, that's pumping it back into the lungs to be dispersed. That's the flow. However, if you look at that diagram there, you can see there are two secret passageways. One of them is this window between the two atriums. This little window only exists before you're born. You see, when you are in vitro or as a fetus or as a baby yet to be born, you don't need to use your lungs. You're not breathing through your lungs. So it wouldn't make any sense. Why would you want to mix your oxygenated blood with your non-oxygenated blood? Why would you have a window here where the blood can pass directly through these two sections? Because it's far more efficient. Because you're not using your lungs, there's a window there, a little secret passageway that allows your blood to circulate more efficiently before you're born. However, the minute you take your first breath, a combination of the pressure formed and this little hormone that's induced, suddenly a flap comes over that secret passageway, and now, for the rest of your life, you will have oxygenated blood pumping one direction with one pump and the other being pulled back in, sent back to your lungs through the other pump. There's also another secret passage. And that secret passage connects the blue line to the aorta red line. It's a little bitty little vessel, also designed when you're a fetus to keep the non-use of your lungs as efficient as possible as you're growing and forming. However, as Brad shared with me, often you will have a child born with a defect. And that defect allows them to use this little bitty vessel. Look how small that is. That's that little secret passage I just described, the ductus arterius. It's a short blood vessel that connects the aorta, which is actually on the top. This is pumping all the blood with oxygen back up to your body, to the top and to the bottom of your body. But this one is the carbon dioxide blood coming back. Why would you connect these two? Except that when you're in utero, it makes it more efficient because your lungs aren't in operation. This is where the surgical team at Children will replumb the heart of a child who has a problem. What's the problem? The problem in this case is down here on the left. Next slide. On the next slide, you'll see that what if your ventricle isn't working? This heart is going to have what's called hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which means this particular ventricle is not pumping. It wasn't formed that way. Something's broken. So now the very pump that's supposed to pump that needed oxygenated blood to your body isn't working at all. This is like a death sentence for a child. Except that they use all these secret passages and all these workarounds to replumb the heart to keep the child alive. How do they do it? Let me go back to my blueprint. What they do is right as you're born, they inject a hormone into a fetus, which keeps this window open. That means because this pump isn't working, this pump can then be used, the suction from that, to pull the oxygen and push it up back to the brain and to the body to keep the child alive. However, the problem is, if this is the pump, it's pulling all this oxygenated blood down from the heart this direction, but we got to get into this tube. So then what they do is they put a little hormone or chemical in to keep that little other secret passageway open. It's a multiple surgery process, and eventually that little bit allows this pump to pull the oxygen from the lungs and now push it up and oh, through the secret workaround, back up to your brain and to your body. A second surgery will widen that and create its own little vessel. And now you have one pump that is pumping both the intake and the outtake. However, as I talked to him, I said, wait a second, that's a problem, right? The reason most of us have this wall here is because you don't want to mix your oxygenated blood, the good stuff, with the carbon dioxide, the bad stuff. Now you've got all of it mixed together. He said, yes. But the body communicates through its biochemical communication system, we got a problem, not enough oxygen is coming. So when you're in vitro, you call up the spleen. Hey, spleen, hey, liver, we need some more blood cells. Before you have all your bones formed to create red blood cells as an adult, did you know your spleen and your liver are producing that until your bones can be formed? Then once you have your bones, all that red blood cells, all those white blood cells are created from blueprints in your bone marrow. Well, the blood tells it, because we don't have enough blood, produce more blood cells. What we can't get in quantity, we'll get in quality. And now the body itself is using this plumbing workaround to then give you more blood. And in doing so, they're saving children's lives by using these secret passageways, these little Scooby-Doo mansion workarounds to heal the body. And now you have one pump doing the work until they can find some piece of technology to help in the multiple surgeries. It's no wonder that around 1000 BC, the Hebrew scholars from the Bible, the poets, as they wrote about the heart, said these wondrous things. I'll give you just a couple. This one's from Proverbs. Keep your heart with all diligence. Man, think about your heart. It's the center of your life spiritually, medically, and psychologically. For out of it spring the issues of life. Everything that matters starts in your heart. You're bitter, it's going to show up in your life. You're holding unforgiveness, it's going to show up in your life. You're worried and stressed all the time, it's going to show up in your life. Guard your heart. Keep your heart. Take care of your heart. But then in the book of Psalms, David is writing. He was a king and a poet, wrote more songs, as we'll find out in the next series, than anyone has ever written in its popularity. He says this, God, you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you. I was skillfully wrought, which means to be made, in the lowest parts of the earth, which is like that mysterious part in the womb he's describing. You see what happened? He just had this change of heart. Look how much I matter. The God of the universe watched over me when I was being formed in the womb. Oh my goodness, the skill and the engineering. I asked Brad, of all the ways they've replumbed the heart on the surgical team, what's kind of one of the most amazing ones he's seen? Instead of me trying to recap what he said, let me just take a minute and a half, let him describe one of the most amazing replumbing they did to the human circulation system. Let's hear his story.
Even like the stuff I see now, after doing this for like 8 years now, last week or 2 weeks ago, we did something where we completely restructured the way that the aorta goes. So normally your aorta comes down like a tube and does this. This section of this kid's, or he was an adult, aorta was completely shot. So they disconnected it here, your heart sits here, brought a tube graft here, anterior to the heart, and connected it here where it comes out. So now this guy, for the rest of his life, or until, unless he needs another surgery, his blood will, instead of doing the normal circuit, splits here, and everything from the bottom half now goes this way instead of the way God made it, and everything from the head up came from this pathway. You see stuff like that, and you're like, man, just to have the knowledge that we've been able to come up with, God had a hand in that. And to see, and it's a miracle in and of itself that the body can just adapt to that and live. I think that that is truly incredible and amazing.
It's one thing to have the technology and the expertise. Another thing to think the body then adapts. You know, it takes on these different changes that we do, and it's even its healing power and being able to do that, that you are made adaptable and flexible to deal with trauma and deal with challenge and change. We're going to move now from the Scooby-Doo mansion to investigating the heart as a barge. As a barge. It's a barge that has this whole circulatory system like a river. And that river is putting oxygen all through your body. As we learned in our week on the lungs, that 2-millicron alveoli sac, as the air comes in from your breath, it quickly passes the oxygen into that bloodstream, and now the heart is going to pump that barge, moving its way through the river and dropping off appropriate amounts of oxygen as it goes. A lot to the brain, a lot to the major organs. And then think about this. You have to have a river, a creek, a little pathway that goes to every single part of your body to feed it all. Think about how complicated and intricate it would be to make sure that your riverway and pathways fit every single place and every single tissue. Meanwhile, you got to drop off that oxygen as you go. Your blood is made up of multiple components. I'll give you an example of what those are. You can go to the next slide. The plasma, which is that liquid kind of in your blood. Your red blood cells, those are the ones carrying the oxygen in this giant barge moving its way, in my metaphor, through your bloodstream. Then you have your platelets. Think of your platelets like a piece of Velcro, but the Velcro is not always activated. When needed, the hooks come out. When not needed, the hooks come in. That's very important because if it was always hooked all the time, it would clot your blood. You'd have blood clots all the time. You need to clot and have those Velcros only when needed. And then sometimes when you have a problem, you have some kind of medical emergency, you call up the bone. Hello, bone? Yeah, this is blood. What do we need here? Ah, you remember that thing we had 3 years ago? Yeah, you still got the blueprints? We got the blueprints. Pull out the blueprints. Let's make some of those white blood cells. And they send them off. And now you can fight whatever it is that you had 3 years ago or 5 years ago through this, not nervous system, a biochemical communication system. But more than that, do you ever think about the wonder that your heart is not only pumping at the right pressure, not only keeping itself from being clogged, but then there are times you need it to clog, meaning you get a cut. Blood is now coming out. How do you know? How does the blood know? How does the heart know to use just enough to clog it without clogging the rest of your body? And the mystery gets wondrous here. Because as the plasma is going by that little cut, the proteins in the blood begin to communicate through that biochemical system. We got a problem over here. And the proteins in the plasma communicate to those platelets running by the cut just for that millisecond. They're right next to the cut. We need some Velcro over here. The Velcro goes out, sticks to the clot. The next platelet comes by, clots. And those hooks hook into each other. They begin to clot your blood. As soon as they go past, the proteins say, turn off. And the Velcro's gone, so it doesn't clot you up other places. And pretty soon, all those little platelets, clot, clot, Velcro, 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 to clot. Now, I don't know if you've ever done any drywall or had drywall done at your home. If you ever tried drywalling, It is incredibly difficult to get the right amount of mud, to sand it, to make it look perfectly. You stand back, you get the special lights, you're trying to make it look good. Your blood system is like having a hole punched in your drywall, and somebody is re-drywalling it from the inside of the wall. How would you get it smooth? How would you get the right paint color to paint it back? How would you make it match the texture of what's already there? Your blood does that every time it clots, while not affecting the pressure and while not affecting the clots that would destroy the rest of your body if everything kept sticking. These Velcro pieces moving through the barge, delivering oxygen, picking up carbon dioxide, all pumped faithfully by your heart. Through this incredible circulatory system. I mean, imagine just trying to plan out the engineering of making sure every little tissue has an in and an out switch. Now, I grew up on the river. I love the river. I know people don't. They think it's disgusting. I grew up in the Illinois River. I still water ski on the Ohio River. I'll probably die soon. But I love the river. I've always loved the river. And I love the sense of adventure that's out there. Sometimes we would tube down the river. One of my dad's favorite stories is, if you ever go tubing down the river, you drive up a mile, you put your tubes in, you have another car and mile down where you're going to get out, you float around together, you have a good time, you get out. One day my dad jumped in with some buddies to do some tubing, and as they are floating down the river, they catch up to another guy. And he says, oh, where are you guys getting out? My dad says, oh, we're getting, no, my dad says, where are you guys getting out? Because we are getting out about a mile from here. The other guy, who clearly had not tubed very often, turned to my dad and said, where are we getting out? Oh, we're just going to wait for it to circle back to where we parked originally. My dad's like, you're serious? It's going to be a long day. Now, your circulatory system is that. It is a circular. It does. Every single one of those creeks and riverbeds and river pathways in your body does circle back so that you can drop off the bad stuff and pick up more good stuff. It's amazing. And again, that might be why the psalmist and Moses, writing at 1500 BC, gives us these insights about your body. Moses, writing about 1500-ish BC, he writes this. He says, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. You want to know where your life comes from, that life-sustaining power? It's in your blood. And I've given it to you upon the altar of atonement for your souls. It's actually even a connection spiritually. The blood can be a connection to your soul. For it's blood that makes atonement, which means like forgiveness. It can cover up things you've done wrong in a spiritual sense, beyond your physical sense. The blood brings life. I tell you who wishes his doctors knew this was George Washington. Anybody know how George Washington died? Blood to death by his doctors. So in his day, they believed in bloodletting. They believed not that life was produced, it was in the blood. They believed the heart produced, made its own blood, pumped it out, and it somehow disappeared into your tissues. So if you got sick, like George Washington did, they said, we got some bad blood over here. They would take a pint of your blood out to make you better. Get rid of the bad blood so your heart will make new good blood. He got sicker. So the doctor said, oh, he's getting sicker. You know what we need to do? Take out another pint. Well, they kept taking pints of blood out of George Washington through bloodletting, and eventually he died because they didn't realize life is in the blood. It doesn't produce new blood. You got to keep that life in there. Job is a guy in the Bible who goes through a very difficult time. If you ever heard of Job, he loses almost everything. He has very rich, great family man, and just in one day, things are devastating. He doesn't understand what God's doing, why God's done it. But even in the midst of despair, even in the midst of difficulty, even in the midst of hardship, he sits down and he reflects on how God made him. And that even though I don't understand what you're doing, God, I know that you love me because I look at how you made me, including my heart. Here's what Job says. Your hands have made me. You fashioned me. I'm an intricate unity. All the interdependent systems, your circulatory system, your respiratory system, your nervous system, it's all interdependent. It's intricate unity. What a way to say it. Remember, I pray, that you made me like clay. You formed me and fashioned me like clay. Now get this, he's a farmer. This is a brilliant farmer perspective on how God designed us. Did you not pour me out like milk and curdle me like cheese, clothe me with skin and flesh, and knit me together with bones and sinews? So if you know, I don't know if you remember, like right before Thanksgiving, sometimes they would pass around creamer in elementary school, and you'd all shake it, 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 and the milk would then turn into, you know, something thicker, right? Well, in the farmer's day, you would take the milk, pour it out, and you would churn it. And that liquid, because of the churning process, would begin to turn into cheese, right? It would become a solid. And sometimes, if you remember from doing this in your elementary school, maybe if you're not a Gen Xer, that's what I did, you're like, wow, I can't believe this liquid, just by shaking it up enough, it turned into, formed into something different and amazing. You think, God, that's what you did to us. My parents slept together. The liquid of semen connected with the egg. And God, then you did something amazing, like how milk turns into cheese. Like, how did the liquid become a solid? God, you did that, but it was so much more than that. I'm an intricate unity of beauty and wonder. In fact, by the time you saw how I was formed and how you made me, it was like you got together and you were knitting with such incredible detail. You knit together all the details of my bones. You knit together all the muscle systems. And I don't understand why I'm going through difficulty right now, but God, wow, I know you care about me because I think about who I was when I was made. He ends by saying, you granted me life and favor. Your care has preserved my spirit, and these things have I hidden in my heart. Like I said, I used to love water skiing on the river. So we were in the Illinois River one time, and my dad was pulling me with this little tri-hole 16-foot runabout, and I'm skiing behind. I'm 16 at the time. And we happened to come around this corner, and barges move very, very slow. And it can be very dangerous, so you got to make sure you stay away from barges. We got plenty of time typically. Well, I don't know how this happened, but we come around the bend, and as we make this turn, it wasn't a barge, but it was a massive yacht, bigger than I've ever seen on the river before or since. As it comes up, it is producing a massive wake. How it snuck up on us, I don't know. But my dad looks at me. I'm looking at him while I'm skiing. The kind of the look was, you better not let go. This is dangerous. He takes me, he can't slow down because I'll fall in and get sucked in. He pulls me as close to the edge as I can. The boat's going by, and I'm holding on for dear life. And as we're going by, I'm holding on. You know, can't let go of this rope. Can't let go of this rope. The boat goes by, and these waves, like 15-foot swells on the river. I've never seen it before. And then as he goes by, all of a sudden, I'm now caught in those swells. At one point, when I'm way up top, I'm looking down at my dad. Hey, Mom and Dad! And then I'm down at the bottom of the valley, and there in the bottom of the valley, there is a wave in between us. Literally, my rope is going straight into the wave. I can't see the boat. I can't see my dad. I can't see the driver. But here's what I knew. Hang on. Trust someone's at the end of the rope. Trust that Dad's going to keep driving. Trust that even when you can't see him, can't experience him, that he's got it together, and that's exactly what I did. Sure enough, I came over that last, and the waves finally came to a settle. My dad's eyes are this big, and my eyes are this big. I'm like, how in the world did that happen? It's kind of what Job is doing. Man, life's going to send you some big waves and unexpected turns. Sometimes you're going to say, I don't see God. I don't know that he's even there. All I see is a wave of circumstances. Just keep holding on that rope. Keep trusting that there's someone driving and guiding that you can trust who loves you. Thirdly, we're going to investigate the heart's what I call kudzu bypass. Again, now you can see I was going to be a doctor, but I became a liberal arts major. So they don't call it in science a kudzu bypass. It's called a collateral circulation. The human heart can naturally create its own bypass around a blocked artery. It's just amazing to me. You think of how much surgery and education required for us to do a heart bypass. If you grew up in Atlanta or near Atlanta, like I lived for several years, there's something called kudzu. It's this very invasive weed. It grows and grows and grows. It can take down, I've seen it take down forests. I've seen it take down houses. It's shockingly strong and grows fast. There's a part of your blood system that your heart, when there's a problem, will create its own bypass. I call it a kudzu bypass because it's like weeds that grow to where it needs to be. So imagine you have a blockage over here on your left. See the big blockage there, and you can see the big bruise on the heart. That's the dead spot. It's not getting enough blood. You're going to have a heart attack. There are times that your blood system will recognize there's not enough blood over there. So the other veins on the other artery will begin to grow, go around the dead spot to say, we're not getting enough blood from this direction, so we're going to, like weeds growing in that direction, we're going to feed that dead spot. And sure enough, you'll bring life where there was only death. It's really interesting that the main metaphor the Bible brings to the problem of human beings is not that we're primarily bad and we need to be good. It's that we're primarily dead and need to be made alive. We've got dead spots. And those dead spots can't be fixed by yourself. You need someone else to bypass your bad habits, bypass your best efforts, bypass, I tried it, why did I break this again? Why do I not do what I want to do? You need an outside source of life to bypass and check in and breathe into you. That's why blood is such an interesting metaphor in the Bible. In the book of Ephesians, it says that Jesus comes to bring life, give you a bypass where there's currently death. It says, but God, who's rich in mercy, which means not giving you what you deserve, but giving you something better than what you deserve, because of his great love with which he loved us, even we were dead in trespass, when we crossed certain lines, did things we shouldn't, when we were dead, not bad, dead. We got dead spots. So what did he do? He made us alive together with Christ. Jesus dies and comes back to life so he can infuse us with life. By grace you've been saved, not by works. You work harder to be good. You don't work harder to receive life from a bypass. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were far off, you couldn't fix it on your own. You're away from the source of life. You are brought near to life-giving nourishment by the blood of Christ. You ever thought it's interesting that like almost every ancient religion, there's some sort of sacrifice? You hear things like, you're a blood brother, or made a blood oath. Or like you've seen the Avatar movies, it's like, you know, we are thanking the deer who just died because by his blood we are provided life by eating it. It's in movies. It's like this idea almost transcends religion, this idea that blood somehow can cover, it can forgive, it can bring us near if we've offended whatever we call the deities or the gods. Well, Christianity is saying Jesus is the final fulfillment of ultimate forgiveness, that he's infusing life. His heart was broken on the cross in order to give you a heart transplant, is the idea. Let's take a close-up view of the heart one more time. If you look at your heart, it's just amazing to see, both from the outside, the chambers, the wiring, the diagram, all those valves coming in, either sending oxygen or maybe coming back and bringing back the carbon dioxide. You look in the inside and just see all the channels that this muscle does. All the valves are going to open and close. Here's a valve that's closed here. It's got to open in just the right timing. If you had an old carburetor car, you know, getting your timing right, gas coming in, fuse coming out, pistons hitting, spark hitting at the right time, all that is just as true right here in your heart. Well, about 6 years ago, I was under incredibly high stress time. My wife had had 2 back surgeries. I was kind of caregiving for her, and I was caregiving for our son, Quinn, and not being able to build a good system. I was just under severe stress. And I don't know why to this day, but I felt like God was telling me I need to go get a heart ultrasound. My doctor didn't order it. I didn't have any symptoms of it, but I felt like I was supposed to do it. So I had to pay extra because I wanted it. So I went to this kind of private place over near where I live, and I sat down. I said, he goes, why do you want this? I said, I don't know. I would like to see my heart. And this isn't my diagram, but let me show you what this heart would look like if it was pumping. He brings up on the screen my literal heart that he's scanning right there, and I'm watching it pump. And I was surprisingly so moved in a way I still can't really explain. For one thing, I realized that even under high stress, that this heart was so faithful in pumping the life I needed, the nourishment I needed. I thought to myself, I'm not sure I've ever thanked God for my heart. And I'm watching this video, just watching that heart pump. My God, thank you for this heart that's kept me alive. Thank you that under severe stress, it's been a big help to me. it has served me well. Then I move kind of from the physical aspect up to spiritual as I was thanking God. Then I start thinking about, even looking back over the previous 48 years at the time, I was 48, the things that had happened that really I could be very bitter about. People had stabbed me in the back. People had done things that were just malicious. And I was watching my heart pump there, and I just started to thank God that my heart hadn't got hard. That my heart was still soft toward people, even mean people. That I hadn't let bitterness or anger or the frustration of the circumstance, like Job had, that was just so out of my control. And I didn't understand what and why God was not doing what he wasn't doing. And I just kept watching my heart pump. And I was just so thankful that I still had a tender heart, that God allowed me to forgive and to trust and to do the things that kept my heart soft toward God and toward others. I'm still not sure why it was so meaningful to me. Maybe why that's why I call this sermon, the main idea is that a change of heart occurs when you get close to your heart. It's not like I went from a terrible way of life to a better way of life. I went from, my current circumstance didn't change, but I had a deeper understanding of this God. Being thankful for the things that were already in me. Being thankful for the path he had me on, choices I made, not to be bitter, not to be angry over certain things. And I just had this change of heart that brought more life into me. So maybe for you, as we finish up this week on the heart, you want to ask God for a new heart. I think it's interesting, one of the Old Testament prophets, way back before Jesus, he writes about that. He says, you can get a new heart from the brains of the operation. If God is truly the brains of the operation in our life, did you know he can give you a new heart? If your heart's gotten hard or beat up or bruised by this world or just infused with bitterness or anger and you can't break yourself free, Ezekiel says, God promises he will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take that heart of stone, oh yeah, that stone, dead heart, that bruised heart, and he'll give you instead a heart of flesh, a tender heart. And I've seen that in marriages. People start off in marriage with a tender heart, and over time we just bruise each other and hurt each other, and that tender heart turns just hard. I've seen married folks who say, God, we need a new heart toward each other. They've tried hard enough, but they begin to ask God. I had one couple who was going through a very difficult time for many years, and they began to just pray every day, God, would you give our marriage a resurrection? Would you give us new hearts for each other? And I've seen them. I saw them about a year ago. And radical change, because God began to infuse their marriage and their life with a new heart. If God is the brains of the operation to put all this together, I want you to know he wants to offer you a brand new heart. There's a famous philosopher and mathematician by the name of Blaise Pascal. Genius guy. And he's known for many things, but one of the things he's known for is as he journeyed toward discovering who God is and who Jesus is, as he began to investigate this and look into it, he described the problem in the human experience as a God-shaped hole in your heart. And that God-shaped hole in your heart is designed for only God to fit. Like a circle fits into a circle. You can try to put a square in there, but you can't fill a transcendent hole with a non-transcendent plug. So you can have this hole in your heart that you can have bigger houses and you can have bigger accomplishments and you have a bigger resume things, and all that's good stuff. I celebrate all that stuff, but it's not going to satisfy or fill a spiritual hole. You can't fill a spiritual hole, which is an immaterial hole, with some material answer. Think of maybe God's asking you, or maybe whispering to you, that there's a hole in your heart that only he can fill. Well, let me give you a chance to pray. Maybe you want to ask for that heart transplant that Ezekiel promised to us. You can just pray in your own words. Just say, God, I got a hole in my heart, and I've been trying to fill it with all kinds of stuff. Good stuff. Great stuff. Important stuff. But God, I want something that can satisfy. Thanks for breaking your heart on the cross so your blood could bring me forgiveness. Would you give me a bypass? Would you give me a transplant? Maybe you want to mention something specific. Say, God, it's hardship has made my heart in pain right now. Maybe it's bitterness. God, I've been holding on to this thing. It's been making me so angry. Or maybe you're not sure. Just say, God, infuse me with your life and give me a new heart. In Jesus' name, amen.